You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Hi.
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 20th of August 2018 to the 26th of August 2018. And we start with, once I've refined Skype, always hard to find with this new Skype, Lupin the Third, Part 5, Episode 20, Zenigata, Gentleman Thief. In which Zenigata has become a gentleman thief due to amnesia.
I can't believe it was the most, like, fucking generic reason for it to be the case.
A blow to the head after a night of drinking.
Or was it just the night of drinking that
did it? Maybe it's just the alcohol, yeah.
This is some fucking bender, man.
That Russian vodka, you know, it's like 200% proof. Is that even possible?
Dear. I was still thoroughly impressed by it, and when it was partway through the episode, I was like, wait a minute, is Zenigata just fucking doing all Lupin shit? But it was even better. He was doing it unconsciously, like copying a plan Lupin had not enacted yet. How would Lupin steal this? A person I don't know.
Much to the chagrin of Lupin, the thought, I mean, even you, a guy who is now reduced to an average dude in the street, hasn't heard of me, Lupin the Third, like world's greatest thief. I'm a little put out by that, to be perfectly honest.
Like, he gets a lot of bad doing in this episode, and I think my favorite is when the two lads are ragging on him. It's like, wait a minute, we haven't been back to Russia in ages. And it's like, did you come back because you were worried about Zenigata? Aw, that is adorable,
no.
Man. No, but now I'm mad he's doing all the thieving that I wanted to do. It's bullshit. I'm the thief. It's great.
It is good. It's weirdly, I would say, the second weakest episode of Part 5 so far. But it was still good.
It's not one of the best ones. Yeah, absolutely. But it was still a lot of fun. Still a lot of good character bits in it.
Yeah. I think it felt like they weren't super off-model, but definitely Goemon looked a little differently shaped head than he normally has in this season.
It's a scarf, man.
Is that what's drawn
carefully up? Deployed scarf to him when he's talking over the walkie-talkies to them and don't have to move his mouth.
Well, yeah, between, not so much on this, but something later on, I feel like that Anime is Hard episode of The Genius Backabond has even made my anime watching, I can now appreciate why an episode looks the way it does, or maybe it has ruined anime forever for me. Of being able to spot, these are all the things, and this is why you can have bad animation and also good animation in the same episode.
we need to put together some kind of forecast, you know, like, how's it going to look this week, you know, what's the first forecast say, the bad anime front moving in from the northwest should be clear by midday, though.
As long as you don't get hit by two or three bad anime tornadoes, you're grand, yeah.
But I don't think I've ever seen an anime episode with quite so many conspicuous vodka bottles.
Yeah, like, there's no subtle hiding of shit here. I mean, like, one character's identifying thing, one character's is a pipe, and the other one's is a vodka bottle, so it's not for the kiddies. Or, sorry, a vodka glass, I should say, yeah. Mm-hmm. I forgot what those characters' names are. That's all I can remember about them, really.
Yeah. This is just to reinforce the fact that we are in Russia, and what did they do in Russia? Just inside and drink vodka, and occasionally rob banks, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, you got to do something to stay warm.
The police is corrupt, and Russian mafia.
Yeah.
They're very minor in it, sure.
Just vodka and crime. That's all they have there, right?
That and dashboard cameras capturing the most insane shit. That's most of my knowledge of Russia, yeah.
And then next week, Shake Hands makes its return as they start to target Lupin in another Lupin hunt.
Yeah, I was like, this sounds awfully fucking familiar. Like, the exact same face recognizing software and shit. And I was like, what, was the first part just like a trial run for this one or something like that? Or the beta or whatever, yeah.
Well, the first one was like that previous game that the company made, which is about, you know, going out and tracking things. But then this version would be the reskin, the Pokemon Go, where it's like very popular and much much better interface. Everyone is into it now. So
okay,
you're much harder.
Yeah, I was wondering, was it like the Facebook to the fucking MySpace or whatever? Yeah,
the Bebo.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm assuming this is the final Mega arc.
Presumably.
Unless they have some sort of wrap-up episode, which, this show being what it's been so far, I could see them doing.
I think so. It's running for, it's 24? But no, it's a little... Would they have, like, 24 and then plow two special ones afterward or something like that?
They might do.
I did it last time.
They did take that week off, didn't they? So.
Yeah.
We shall see. Anyway, next up we got... What have we got? Let me open my thing so I've got these in the right order. Sheets. There we go. Next up is Mr. Tonegawa's Middle Management Blues. Episode 8.
Episode
Shrimp.
8. Yep. You haven't caught up on it yet, have you, Niall?
No, I haven't, but I don't know about Niall.
No, man. I really want it, but God damn it. I just do not have the time or energy.
That's totally understandable. I'll try and run through it quick. So, Ebitani's still missing from the opening, but he's not dead. He has a business lunch with with Mr. Tanigawa, where, like, he's going to give him, like, his new pitch for his new idea, but Tanigawa is not going to take him seriously because he's bought this really big parfait kind of ice cream situation that he's eating the whole time. And it's like, motherfucker, do you show no remorse whatsoever? Like, so he doesn't take that too seriously. And he's like, come back to me when you're ready to fucking prove to me that you're actually sorry. So he comes back to him with this new fucking business opportunity for him that they can make a lot of money. It's basically a pyramid scheme. Tanigawa pegs it straight away. He called him into a meeting for a pyramid scheme. He's like, this is a fucking pyramid scheme, all you people here. And he has a stirring speech about, like, the putting hard work and effort in and climbing your way up to earning a lot of money. But everyone there laughs because they're all heavily in on it. And he can't even convince Ebitani to leave. So he goes back to the office and receives a letter from Ebitani later, I assume a day later, like later that day. I don't fucking know. It doesn't make any timelines. This could have been several short episodes, but it works pretty well for this. He gets the letter and it's like, dear Mr. Tanigawa, I realized that they were actually, you know, a total crooked thing and they got arrested. So it's a good thing I quit when I did. Thanks for sticking up for me whenever I've been in trouble. Yours faithfully, Ebitani from the detention center. And it's like, motherfucker, you realize way too late. Like, cut to, I don't know, next day, he meets up in the coffee shop again. This time, Ebitani is having a very sensible coffee cream, so he doesn't look like an idiot. And he's going to show Tanigawa his new money-making team, which is a shrimp roll, where he polled people in some fucking place, and 90% of people said they like shrimp. So therefore, this is a done thing. And he even gets to do a cooking demonstration in front of in the offices, and all his old co-workers are like, does he not think this is really awkward? But Ebitani has no fucking shame or self-awareness whatsoever, as you've learned from this fucking episode. Mm-hmm. And he cooks them up the shrimp. It's made out of Japanese lobster. You put it in lettuce, and I forget the sauce he puts on it, and just puts it in a wrap. So it's just like a fucking lobster sticking out of your burrito. And he just, like, everyone, go try it. It's pretty great. They bite into it. It's fucking horrible, like, because you're just eating shards of shell and everything, and it's the worst. But Ebitani has already put himself, like, he's bought 200 kilograms of it already, thinking it was going to be his fucking success story. And so they all kind of take pity on him, and they're like, I'll buy a bit of lobster off you. It's like, I'll buy 1,000 yens worth, that kind of thing. And he's like, he pulled himself out of the hole. He gets another letter. Dear Mr. Tonegawa, thanks very much for your inspiration about the virtues of lobster, and you don't like where this is going. He buys like a fucking ton of lobster, thinking he can sell it now. And that's where the episode ends. Like, nothing gets done. It's just about the guy who's been fired and still, like, missing from the credits. But it's just such bullshit. I love it.
How are we supposed to kill a kaiju with this?
I don't know. Maybe they'll never get to the fireworks factory. I don't know.
Well, remember, there's 26 episodes, so...
They got to put in a little filler.
Yes.
By which I mean the entire fucking thing is filler to get to the actual show that has already fucking happened and done.
No, it's not filler. It's all the theme.
No. That's the thing. It's beautiful filler. That's what I like.
Labyrinthine backstory.
Yeah.
How did the TI group make its millions financing these evil games?
I don't know fucking how. They seem to be massively incompetent. dear.
Then we got Late Night, The Genius Bakemon, Episode 7. We'll do a presentation, and I want to become a popular seiyuu. So in We'll Do a Presentation, they get in on the PowerPoint game of Mr. Tonigawa, as another Kohai has asked to see Bakemon's dad. This time he didn't show up at his door, just told him to come to this company for at 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock exactly.
We get a bit with him and the receptionist where it becomes clear that Papa does not know what appointments are.
He doesn't know what many things are, including like work, as we find later on. Yeah.
But then he's left to wait for about an hour and a half, and it turns out the reason he's been left to wait for an hour and a half is because his Kohai has realized it's the wrong senpai that he's invited, and so therefore he has to produce a presentation to explain the terrible mistake he's made and to apologize.
Papa. But he took an hour and a half to fucking put together a PowerPoint presentation.
Oh, yeah. Did you see all the wipes he put in? They're amazing.
Like it was, like I said, I think the Mr. Tonigawa one was on point because it was like it was presenting a good idea with PowerPoint. It was just like, PowerPoint, you could have fucking done this with paper and it's still a good idea. But this was like more real PowerPoint. It was just like, and why are the three reasons I would have called you here? I want money off you. You don't have any fucking money. I want this thing. Or I've called the wrong person. The answer is number three. That's the reason I've called you. Or I have the wrong person. It's like, how do you get the wrong person? Well, how do we get the wrong person? Next slide. You know, and I was just like, fucking hell, this is interminable. But obviously that's the point, yeah.
Particularly it's mid-2000s PowerPoint because they appear to be using Windows XP. Yeah.
It's the little fucking, the standard framing shit. Yeah. dear.
And this leads them to then produce a presentation to explain to the cop whose eyes meet in the middle why he's not popular with women.
They've done all kinds of polls and research that say he's not popular with women. And none of it is helpful in the slightest because how could it be, I suppose, is the thing.
The conclusion is basically there is nothing he can do to improve his chances.
And it takes so long to get to that point. And he's like, oh, I'm very interested in this. He's like, no, that doesn't tell me anything. And he's just getting more and more frustrated. Like, it was basically like me at the first part of this. I was like, just fucking get on with it. But yeah, that's the joke.
And then the second half is Bakemon declares that he wants to become a famous voice actor. And so first of all, famous seiyuu. So first of all, Papa has to figure out what a seiyuu is, because it's a voice actor. And therefore he's got to investigate as whether this is a suitable job for his son. So he needs to go and become a famous voice actor first to discover.
They have to explain to him that we're all voiced by voice actors in this. Yes. And he's like, oh, weird, I thought we were just talking. that was a good bit.
And then so he just hangs outside this club asking random old men and hostesses as to whether they're famous voice actors. I couldn't find whether or not they were famous voice
actors. I
fucking
bet even money that they are, man.
Yes. Yeah, I bet.
It's like that's the obvious joke. They have to have done it.
What's the fella's name who shows up? It's Chorobatsu's voice.
It's Chorobatsu, but I've forgotten his fucking name now. Fuck. And they say it so many goddamn times.
They do,
remember.
Hiroshi Kamiya.
That's it.
I got as far as spelling Hiroshi and the fucking thing autofilled when I was searching him while watching it. So yeah, that I think that shows he's famous, right?
Yeah. Mm. He's one of those guys where I look him up and go, fucking hell, he's older than I am.
He has a youthful kind of aura, as it was. Mm. And face.
And face, yeah. And stylist.
I suppose Yeah. I suppose he would be. He's Levi in Attack on Titan. You know, that's a pretty popular program.
Yeah, but he won't admit until far into the episode that he is actually a famous voice actor. And even when he admits it, he says, "You didn't hear it from me." But I am a famous voice actor. And you don't belch into the microphone.
Dude, that fucking burping bit, like, had me in stitches. Because it was one of those, like, repeated jokes that is like, this shouldn't get funnier, but it got funnier every time. it was just so stupid.
Yes, because he asked if he could go and voice a, record a voice demo, and he just keeps on burping during saying his name in different places each time, and he keeps on reassuring Hiroshi Kamiya that it's fine, that's a fine take, no problem.
And again, you have that, like, it's nearly like a recurring character, the woman who's working in the booth with him, who's just going with Bakuman's papa. And she's like, yeah, I burned it onto CD already. Is that okay? I put all three of them on there.
Are you going to edit any of those into the sound better? Because but at that first take, you probably cut the end bit and it would sound fine, but no.
The second one's like, there's a burp at the end and the middle, and the third one's just a burp, I think it was. There was no actual talking. Fucking hell, man.
But you could just like make animal noises, I suppose. He could be the Japanese Frank Walker.
But he's happy with that. That's as far as he needs to go to just determine that being a voice actor is a perfectly fine job for his son to do, because all you have to do is go in and burp into microphones.
But obviously, by the time he gets home, his son has a new dream now.
He's going to be a famous YouTuber instead.
No, he wants to go to Tokyo University to become a famous YouTuber. You put a lot of effort in to become a YouTuber. Dear.
Yes, I forgot the Tokyo University, because that is the bit which is, of course, totally impossible for him. For that son, at least. You assume that Hajime will find it very easy.
Oh, yeah.
If they ever get to age.
Probably not.
No. That was very similar. You're right, that repeated bit with the burping of, like, the burp at the start, the burp in, multiple burps in the middle, and then the final take, which is just a burp.
There's so many, like, repeated jokes with him where they're just bouncing off each other. It's like, I want to become a famous voice actor. Well, how are you going to start doing that? You got to work towards it. It's like, no, what do I got to do to be a famous voice actor? Well, first you got to be a voice actor. And the papa guy is just like, what? You're just blowing my mind here, man. There's just so much stupid back and forth in this part. It really got me.
Yep, yep, yep. Then we've got Angle Noir. Do you have a chance to watch any more Angle Noir, Niall?
I did. I am up to date in that, pretty much. Getting a little bit impatient with it, I suppose. It's kind of been in the doldrums looks-wise in the last couple of episodes. So the battles, when they have been there, have not been the most exciting. I've enjoyed the kind of tactics they've employed. Like when they're being chased and they buy some time to get away, they lure the guys like onto a narrow mountain pass. And then obviously when they're on a narrow kind of narrow footing, they'll be able to kind of fight them off with a smaller amount of men. But also having the idea to have this guys in the trees on the cliff opposite to pelt them with arrows while they hold them there. And that's pretty good. And introducing more guys in on the Mongol side, including a big chubby dude who is like simultaneously kind of ruthless and brutal, but also kind of affable, and he's very hurt by the loss of his men. And of course, he's seen what's her face, the princess, and think, oh, a lady, I gotta get me some of that. Somehow, the Emperor of Japan came in person to deliver a letter which relays orders to the secret clan who lived on the island for centuries, who've been there to turn the independent nation, because otherwise they wouldn't boast their numbers. Somehow, the Emperor was like came all the way down here to deliver this letter in person. This is the fun to do. I have no idea how he got there. And so now they've piled up at them and gone to their hidden fortress, and Jinzaburo is immediately dismissive of their whole thing. This is a big, impressive fortress you got here, but we've got way too few guys to defend this massive thing, because it's like the walls surrounding it are a mile and a half, like all the way around, you know, and they've got like thousands of dudes, so, and we can't hold off this much. There wasn't any interest with this few guys. And some of the other prisoners have arrived ahead of them, including the guy who ran away at the first opportunity he got. And he has approached one of the other guys, Shiraishi, the other kind of honorable samurai who is in the band, says, "Hey guys, I got a surefire way for us to survive this conflict. Obviously, we're going to betray everybody and join up with the Mongols." Ugh. Oh, yeah. Kind of laying up a big groundwork there. I've been a little bit let down by the kind of cast members that they've been kind of going to focus on. Obviously, Jinzaburu is the main dude, but there were so many other guys in the prisoners who were brought here who we want to see a little bit more about. But you've only seen like little bits and hints of them. Maybe they'll probably do it further on down the line, because I think it was revealed that there are further arcs that extend beyond just the battle on this island. It's not just going to be about this island, so I must hit the mainland or they go to them or something like that. So maybe like way further down the line in the comic they get some more bits with the other prisoners. But it's kind of a shame, because I know like I like Jinzaburu and all, but I kind of want to see a little bit more time spent on the rest of the cast, because I kind of like them as well. I don't seem to get enough screen time. But the time you do spend with Jinzaburu is good, because you're seeing a lot more of kind of why he is, in a sense, the best guy for the job. Because part of the reason why he got imprisoned and considered in the first place is he's a dude who can't help button his nose in other people's fights. Because he was this disgraced clan who, like, decades ago had plotted to overthrow the emperor, but, you know, they were caught, or they were dead now, and they spent the last like couple of years trying to repair their reputation. The guys after him, but then they get framed up by some other guy who is trying to overthrow the emperor. And Jinzaburu says, "Ah, fuck that! I'm not gonna let that stand. I'm gonna come and help these guys." But he got implicated, and that's why he gets sent to the island, because they thought he was involved in this military coup. And so, like, even though he doesn't really have much stake, shall we say, in the helping out the fun people here, on paper, he can't help but want to assist them anyway. And I think it's mostly as well, it's like kind of calling out people and their stupid ideas, because especially like as we've seen with the samurais who just charged their debt and funds. I told him it was a stupid idea, but it didn't listen to me. So he's doing the same as well with the hidden like mercenary clan. It's like, we're a hidden mercenary clan, we've been here and on the Emperor's order for centuries, you know what we're doing. And Jinzaburu was saying, "No, you fucking don't. Because you've obviously been here for so long, you've like your tactics and things are completely outdated to deal with these two. They've got like a much wider variety of troops and techniques and tactics. No, not just from Mongolia. They got Korean guys, they got Chinese guys with bombs and stuff. Like, you're completely outclassed in that sense." So there's going to be a bit of butt in the heads there about what the best approach is. But these guys at Toberai, the hidden clan, they've got some pretty cool tool things. As we see, like, some ladies coming in on a boat into like the hidden bay that they've escaped to, and they're being pursued by some Mongol boatmen. It's like, oh no, they're being chased by the Mongols, but actually it was all a ruse, because the ladies just jump out of the clothes and hop into the water. And then they just swim around, and then they just stab the guys stab the guys in the boat from just out of the water, and then like some kind of weird mermaid ninja thing going on. It was pretty good. Which I just want to see a bit more of the cast introduced. Like, you know, we've seen like a little bit of Hitari, the archer guy, Ambushi, the little runt who's a scout whose elf eyes can see in the dark. The big burly shark tooth pirate dude who's like not doing anything at all. He's like, "Come on, give him some more stuff to do." So I hope it kind of gets up the pace a little bit more, and hope the visuals can keep up as well, for something more exciting. Still enjoying it in a sense, but I do want it to kind of pick up its game in a lot of ways.
Then we've got Ninja Girl and Samurai Master episode. Oh, hang on, I've lost my notes. 73. The Blessing of the Demon. In which we get a bunch of coincidences begin to make... give lead to a legend that Nobunaga is blessed by demons.
He is a jammy bastard. Give him touch.
I mean, the narrator explains he gets across the river from growing up near rivers and stuff, so he knows where the low points are by pushing your man in as a fucking guinea pig.
But he doesn't realize. He's like, oh, yes, you're right. No, you're right, master.
Well done, sir.
I thought I was in danger there, but obviously you only pushed me in because you knew I wouldn't be in danger. And it's like, Nobunaga's not fucking saying jack. It's like, well, if he dies, he fucking dies. But obviously the fact that your man can't follow him is because the river picks up and it's like, that seems a bit too lucky. Almost like he's the blessing of, I don't know, say Buddha or a monster.
Buddha, because he hates Buddha. Because
it can't be that one. Not that
so
I think about it.
It must be the anti-Buddha.
Oh, we also see why your man has so many scars on his head.
Yes.
the self-flagellation, I guess.
And then the Azai and the... who's the other guys?
Asakura.
They go, oh no, Nobunaga's army's coming up here, where we're going to go. Oh, that's sacred ground up there. No one would ever attack anybody taking...
Nobody would do it, Ash. Nobody who believes in the fucking retribution of the heavens would ever think of attacking Mount TA. No siree.
Well, also your man's thinking is like, well, I could just live on the mountains forever. Like just wanting to abandon everything.
And then Yoshinari's ghost turns up at the end to speak to
Chidori. But only Chidori can see him.
And she tells her, that's great for watching over us forever, but please don't stand by me when I'm trying to go to sleep.
That's really weird. And he's like, yeah, okay, fair enough.
You've got it.
I wonder whether that joke's going to come back when the creepy old man dies.
You see, he there. Oh yeah, he's.
I'm only going to watch over you when you're taking a wash. How about that?
It was good because of I imagine like the lucky coincidences are fairly true to history.
Yeah,
but then also the ironic dialogue makes it humorous.
Yeah,
just he just was an absolute jammy bastard. Because
that's how you get to be big in history. You just get fucking lucky for the most part.
Fucking like Uesugi Kenshin and fucking the other guy. Shit, I forgot his name. I'm blanking on his name. Other fucking great daimyo of his day. Basically, both of the guys who had so much fun, great clout, and resources to kick Nobunaga's ass like 6 weeks from Sunday, both died of like cancer just before they were about to mount their counter assault on him. You know, and it would seem like that's too much, way too convenient. He must have sent an assassin to go take him out like before they could do that, right? No, just like genuinely, they both died of natural causes before they could like mount their offensives against them, against the Nobunaga territory. I thought, how did he get that lucky twice in a row? and all the other times as well, you know, like again going back all the way to against the battle against Imagawa when the rainstorm came, Master approached and made the field all muddy so Imagawa couldn't react in time. Lucky fucker.
Then we've got Banana Fish, episode 8, Banal Story.
Don't be selling yourself short there, Banana Fish.
Maybe some kind of like thing that sounds like banana that would fit into the title would be good. I'll come up with this one, so you have to.
So,
basically, like the doctor's story is that we made the drugs so we could make drugs to make money. I guess that is pretty like basic as a start out this whole fucking kerfuffle. Yeah.
The banality of evil, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, and then his same thing of like realizing it was bad, but then not being able to let go of it because it was still a scientific discovery.
It's still cool science stuff.
Yeah. But, yeah, by the end you get feeling like, okay, going to get the older brother pitched against the younger brother at some point. Oh, and we just Max's family do not die this episode. They were just a lure so they could kidnap AG without being around.
I don't even know if it's implied or just basically fucking said of what happened to his ex-wife. Like,
I'm
pretty sure it happened based off the characters' interactions, but it's not outright said. And based off this show, I'm like, yeah, that probably happened.
Yeah, I just wanted to believe, her face is bruised up, so a lot of things probably just did that, right? But, you know, that it seems to go something a lot more further, a lot more fucking insidious than that. And it's like,
I'm surprised they pulled their punches and not outright saying it, but yeah, I'm pretty sure based off this show, it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess they're doing their best to kind of hold that restraint back and all, and not go into full graphic detail about it, I suppose.
Unless it's about pretty guys, in which case then we will go into full graphic detail with it.
They never show you. They've never shown any assault yet.
But they've outright said it definitely fucking happened. You get to see the characters' faces reacting to this. That was just like the horror and everything.
They've discussed what they're going to do to AG. But not in specific terms, but they just let you know that it's not going to be good.
Yeah, it's like, let your imagination do all the horrible hard work for you.
Yeah.
But then we also get the idea in this episode that, Lung, while he's a bad guy, he's not necessarily on the same side as all the other bad guys because he's got a grudge against his brothers.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. It's like he could nearly team up with our heroes to get his revenge, but it's like, no, I'll just stick with the plan until I get my fucking chance, really.
Yeah. They also treat him like the runted up litter and just kind of push him around, so I doubt he feels good about that either.
Yeah, when you get the gist of it, it's like, because initially they refer to his mother, a different mother than them, as the woman who lured our father away or something like that. Tempted our father.
Corrupted our dearest father.
Yeah. And then obviously they're the reason she's dead.
Of course, her father, he was a pure fucking kind-hearted individual with no fucking reason.
It was all
for
the,
doing
it was
what
all
he
the
did,
woman's
yeah.
fault.
Yes.
So much horribleness in this America.
I get the feeling there's going to be a lot of killing going on in the next episode.
Because I guess everyone's captured and it's all going to go to a head. Like it can't not do.
Yeah, we've seen when Long can put that needle, he can't. They can do more than paralyze you.
Yeah, probably some nasty. Maybe not Fist of the North Star stuff, but like something probably pretty bad. Actually, I thought that was kind of bad because it's not that the scientist was a good guy or anything, but I was kind of like, he doesn't deserve to be like punched that hard. He's just an old fucking man.
No, but doing the action film thing, it's like, I'm going to punch him. I'm going to punch him. Hoo-yah!
This one's for AG. And then he claps on the floor and no one helps him back up. Yeah. Come on,
his house is burned down.
No, I mean the Japanese...
No one
helps him back up. It's like, dude, this guy's your friend. What are you doing?
I don't know if like's the right word, but I did like that Lung's how he makes clear how he's going to make sure that everyone knows that Shorter's betrayed them.
Oh yeah, that was pretty dumb. It's like, oh, I've stabbed him so he can see nor hear nor do anything, but this guy, I poisoned him with a thing that lets him fucking tell him everything. He knows you're going to betray him. He's going to tell him, isn't that right? He'd say yes, but he can't because he's paralyzed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a weird kind of like, the depths of my fucking... You could have just left them a note, by the way, we've kidnapped your man.
But yeah.
But
no. Well, no, they know that... Obviously, but he wants them to know that Shorter Wong has betrayed him as well.
I don't know how that benefits him at all. Oh, also, he's keeping from his brothers what banana fish actually is. Because he's just told them it's a poison. Assassination poison.
Yeah.
So he's playing multiple fucking games here, and I'm not sure, besides revenge on his brother, is what his end goal or how he's going to get to that. I don't really see the plan here. other than fucking with people.
And then Shorter himself does some blackmail as well of allowing him to accompany AG there, otherwise he's going to kill AG and then kill himself.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to protect you, don't worry, AG. I'll fucking kill him if you guys come near me. I was like, that's a unique way of doing that, okay.
Well, he's protecting him from possibly a fate worse than death.
Yeah, yeah, there is that. It's like, yeah, you'd be better off with your throat cut than whatever that fucking creepo is going to try on you.
Yeah, yeah. Presumably Ash has explained to him exactly what sort of things Dean is into.
Mm.
Yeah. I feel bad for the guy because it's not like he's torn because of, oh, he has his loyalty to the triad from saying, no, they're threatening my fucking sister. So that's the long and short of it. It's not any kind of loyalty to my fucking community. It's just because they're threatening me. That's all it is.
Yeah, I think Ash says, even like when he's explaining it to Max, it's like, it's not like, oh, that bastard Shorter, he's betrayed us for his own race or anything of that. It's just like, yeah, he's got a sister in New York, and it tells you everyone everything. It's just like, oh, fuck. So yeah, they have shit on him that he can't not do what they say.
So I guess everyone back to New York next episode.
No cross-country tour this time, I imagine.
No. I don't know whether we'll ever check back in on his dad to see whether he survived that shot. But
The guy's an asshole.
Yeah, that was rough, though.
Yeah.
Like, Lady Jennifer did not deserve to get what she got.
Oh, fuck no.
That was so rough.
Oh, it's an ugly, ugly show in theme. yeah.
In production, it's fucking great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Looks great.
Then we've got Working Buddies 2, Episode 8, Builder Buddies, in which they are they're working on a building site, building a house, with the assistance of three brothers.
Three little pigs.
Yes.
They're not so small. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
They're three little
I didn't get it where they were going with it until they started talking to them off the job and as to what their favorite building material is.
Yes, but then they don't want to ask what happened to the third brother because they're like, I'm the first brother, I'm the second brother, I'm the fourth brother.
It's like, oh, that's a bit awkward. It could have been a sister, not in the building business. You don't know.
They're building this house for the wolf from the water park episode and his son.
That kid looks really familiar to me. I can't quite place him, though. Hmm.
And, he starts causing trouble when his son starts sneezing in the house, but then they threaten to sue them. And but they come up with the idea of putting in straw carpets so we won't have an allergy to them.
Because no one has a fucking allergy to straw.
Well, maybe wolves don't.
Yeah, I guess wolves would be less likely to. But I mean, like, you're in a fucking building site. Like, what you think? There's not going to be dust around and shit.
They came on to the site without wearing the masks, protective gear. I'm pretty sure it was clearly posted outside. You could put on this point without wearing all this gear. So
I think the lads are all wearing hard hats and everything. Sensible enough.
Or at least a bandana that Max thought I was a carpenter. So,
and then the frog shows up, who we mentioned last week.
Mentioned him and he'll appear. Yeah,
yeah. I don't know whether he's been on all the ending episodes or whether it was just last week's that he was in the ending credits.
I feel like I've seen him before, like hanging around in the background of an ending credit.
But anyway, he actually shows up and tells them that they shouldn't work till the point where they get ill, because otherwise what's the point of working?
Defeats the purpose, yes.
Yeah.
Also, he's wearing no clothes and going fishing.
Yes.
Yeah, because he's off today.
He's off every day.
Why doesn't his day off? It's his business.
Yeah, from his Wikipedia description, Dwayne, I think you're right. I think he's off every day.
I think that the creature that shall not be named is to represent, you know, solid work advice and ethic and that kind of thing. And he's like, hey, no, don't fucking go mad with it. Because so far it's been about working, buddies. It's not about, hey, don't fucking work yourself to death, buddies.
Yes. It's not self-care buddies yet.
Yeah, yeah. But those are also important things to be imparted by a different naked, weird creature.
And then the wild boar who likes straw is impressed that one of his straw things has come alive.
Yeah, because initially he was annoyed at the lads going like, why the fuck would you make a house out of straw? That's really weird. And he's made straw effigies of them that he's going to presumably do some sort of voodoo stuff on. But yeah, his straw creature that shall not be named has come to life rather conveniently. But you can see that it's he's wearing it as a costume, isn't he?
He is, yes.
Is he?
Yeah. Yes. There's like a gap in the back of the straw that has like his butt hanging out or something.
Oh, okay.
Creation is an act as best performed in adversity, is his saying.
Hmm.
Which kind of goes against what the frog was telling them.
Yeah. It's the complete opposite advice.
That introducing that frog is interesting. Whether it means anything for the show, I suspect not.
No.
At least not this season. I suspect they're probably going to go for a third season.
Mm.
Yeah, well, as long as this keeps selling merchandise, then I'll keep making stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
There's definitely merchandise of that frog. Because when you look his name up, it's mainly the merchandise comes up first.
Well, he's been in more merchandise than he has episodes so far, yeah. Yeah.
Then there's no Bono Bono this week, either because it was late or it's moved days. But as Working Buddies resumed on its normal day, I'm guessing just late again.
Oh, if we get two Bono Bonos this week, I'm happy enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then it's My Hero Academia. Episode 58, special episode, Save the World with Love, a prequel to the movie, which apparently is already out in Japan, so I'm not sure why it came out this week. Special episode.
Well, like, All Might says, like, oh, we're just going to interrupt the action, that thing, and Midori's like, but come on, I was just getting to, like, the good bit. He's like, no, time to do the advertising for the movie, man. That's out this summer.
I'm glad I didn't watch it then.
I kind of loved how brazen those bits were.
Yeah, those bits were good. The rest of the episode is a attempt to do a Detective Conan episode with all the favorite characters.
With the cast of it's like we have a special cast here of the favorite of the top polling characters of My Hero Academia.
It seemed like doing Conan with kids who got superpowers make it mysteries get solved incredibly quickly. Was it just me?
No,
it sets itself up like it's a regular thing where there's like, oh, you're gonna have to go in and fight the villain and save the civilian hostages, and it's like, no, it's a mystery. Because it's a murder mystery.
Yes.
Who done it? The building's been sealed by cardboard policemen, so clearly everyone inside here is a potential person who done it.
And our suspects are the teachers either underacting or overacting wildly.
I prefer the overacting wildly. I mean, like, it turns out fucking Midnight is actually a pretty good actress. Who knew?
Cementos, less so, and what's the guy with the...
Present Mike.
Present Mike. He's the one who's, like, the happiest.
Yo! I mean, his backstory is he was buying a ring for his fiance or something, but yes, he can't help but try and half-wrap that.
But it's very Conan-like, here are the three suspects.
I was also getting, like, some Phoenix Wright shit, you know? That kind of genre, yeah.
And there's a shot of Siyu's bum, which is, like, I was like, I'm pretty sure that would not be in the comic.
Nope. A lovingly rendered butt kind of thing. Yes. I must have missed that. Thank fucking.
It's when she goes over to investigate the body. It's like
when she kneels down or
Wouldn't she like crouch down like a frog would?
But she was crouched. Maybe that's just she was me. Crouched, but I'm guessing it's like
there's a couple of steps. Yeah, of like lasciviously animated butt animation.
I must have not been paying attention for that, which is I'm better off.
You see, I wasn't paying attention to butts in the episode, and then I turned around and said, what the fuck?
And then butts!
Well, no, I'm interested.
There's like somebody released a mixtape with the cover was like some sort of taken from a doujin with her in it, and people were absolutely outraged and confused this week.
Wait, what?
A rapper dropped a mixtape, and the cover was of, I think, just nicked straight off a My Hero Academia doujin, and it's Froppy in a bikini. Well, in a bikini? No, I'm not sure she's wearing any clothes. I think she's just covered up with...
Steam?
No, it's something to do with the rapper's name, I think, is what he's covered up with. I can't remember exactly. But yes, people were outraged. Like, what are you doing to Froppy? They were saying.
Yeah, people are weirdly into frogs, it turns out. Yeah.
Into this frog.
Into this
frog. Into this frog. Yeah, yeah. You're right.
We should spread the word around getting more into the work-life balance frog to try and get their minds out of the gutter.
Oh, that was the fascinating thing of me calling it the work-life balance frog on Twitter. It's suddenly getting retweeted by people who are just searching for work-life balance as that that being their brand. So,
well, yeah, you can literally buy that merchandise now, I guess. Yeah.
So it turns out that it was a suicide. Ding, ding, ding.
And it was a love story.
It was a love story between All Might and Midnight's character, because All Might's playing the villain who's committed suicide. But then
I thought he was pretty fun as the villain.
He was, but then it turns out after Midoriya solves it all, nobody else really.
Yeah, no one else fucking does. Like, everyone else kind of fucked it over. Well, either didn't do anything or fucked it over.
Yeah, or just stood around while Detective Conan explained everything. they still get 0 points because it turned out that the villain was only pretending to commit suicide.
That was bullshit. That was fucking... I was so fucking annoyed by that. Because, like, the thing with Froppy, like, accidentally tickling All Might's nose is like, yeah, he's pretending to be dead. And I was like, yeah, you fucking called it. But apparently that didn't fucking count because him acting dead didn't count in this fucking thing. It's like, well, I have to assume that he's dead because of the situation. I'm not assuming those are real policemen that have been turned two-dimensional and knocked over as cardboard cutouts.
To be fair, they're mad at it as well.
Yeah, that was complete fucking bullshit. that was bullshit. I'd complain.
But the interesting thing is in this week's... Because obviously you got All Might and Midnight playing lovers in this.
Yeah.
There's a line in this week's chapter. Let me see if I can find it. Alluding to... It's Mina basically wondering if Midnight and All Might are a couple. Just because they happened to come into the room together at the same time.
That's a bit of a stretch, but it's a teenage girl who's really into boys and relationships. Yeah,
I think he suddenly remembered, perhaps from watching the anime, that, oh yeah, that was a character point she had, and I haven't really brought it out recently. Is that, yeah.
It's like, question, did they actually solve the mystery, or was the mystery that he's pretending to be dead, so you'll get distracted and he can run away?
I guess that was the intended mystery, yes.
Okay, because he says, like, yeah, you've totally figured out the love plot that we made up. Like, yeah, that was totally the plot on the fly, but that wasn't the plot.
Yeah.
I wasn't entirely sure if there was actually a secret love story that they'd written into this test or what was going on, yeah.
What crime has been committed here? He wasn't, no one was killed, and everything was fine, right? What?
Well, I mean, like, he still robbed a jewelry store.
This seems like quite a waste of our incredible powers. I mean, you got a guy who can create fucking ice and fire at the same time. We need him here to try and solve this.
Yeah, I initially think their first response of is like, well, the police have the building surrounded. We should probably just bring the police in because this seems more like their deal. I think that was the right fucking choice. Yes. Maybe that would have got them some points. You know, like a passing grade or something, yeah.
Why wouldn't you bring, like, the weasel cat dog man whose power is being a super genius dude? Like, wouldn't he be much better for this? I don't know.
Dear.
Yeah, the line is, she says, Midnight, also, All Might and Midnight are here. Is love in the air? And then Midnight says, cut that out, I don't mess with older men. yes, you can skip this episode. It basically also introduces, what's his name, Dave?
Oh, yeah, he gets an email at the start of the episode from his best friend, Dave, which I fucking, it's like, ah, oh, Dave, my good friend Dave, and it's just such a normal name next to all these fucking weirdos.
He's got a weird surname, though.
Yeah, but that only emphasizes the normalness of Dave more. He gets the email at the start of the episode, then reads it at the end of the episode, and I was like, oh yes, this will tie into the movie, as he then explains out of character or in character at the end of the episode.
Dave Shield. Professor Dave Shield.
dear.
Apparently his quirk is bendy fingers.
Oh, I have that.
I'm reading the description. Ooh. And it is a very lame quirk.
Hey, shut up.
It's how you use it, man.
This quirk allows David to bend his fingers a little more than a normal person, which gives him increased dexterity.
Well, no, you got better than that. You can fucking bend your fingers like way more than a normal person.
Way back. And then bend them all the tips individually. And it's a great icebreaker at a party. So there you go. It's this guy's uses.
Yeah, I mean, like, considering, like, fingers flat to the hand, Niall can bend his fingers back, like, what, 45 degrees?
Easily. I'm doing it right now, although you can't see it on my computer.
Makes for great radio.
Do it left hand, right hand. I can do a little bit with toes as well.
Okay, there you go. That's fucking, you got Dave beat, man. You could do a movie.
Yeah. Cast me in this movie.
I assume there's more to the movie than him bending his fingers.
Oh, you never know. That, maybe that's why it was really unpopular.
Then we've got Gigagain no Kitaro, episode 22, Berserk, the terrifying Yokai, Gyuki.
I see how you mixed those two up.
I
yeah.
did, yes. So they're blooming going on holiday again.
They have not been back from the summer break. That's no. Just it. They're just going on a summer tour.
This time on a holiday that Nekomasume won at a lottery.
I was waiting for that to be like a thing that they've been tricked into this.
Ratman's latest scam to draw them on here.
No, it's that they legitimately won a holiday to this recently converted holiday island.
It just so happened that Ratman was running an entirely separate scam on that same island.
So was that a thing he did that was nice?
I think he was like working as a consultant for a...
Oh, like a freaking cult Uma TV show or something. Yeah, that was it.
Finding Bigfoot type of job.
Yeah. But because there was supposed to be some spooky monster on this island, but like none of the locals are like, no, we're a tourist island. We don't do spooky shit. We've covered all that up. I mean, we don't do spooky shit. That would scare the tourists off.
Happy keyring.
Anyway, once again, a monster is unsealed.
I mean, like, it wasn't by Ratman this time. It was by some fucking asshole. The guy who kept wiggling his butt. I did notice that butt wiggle, all right.
I assume he was a parody of somebody, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I think they say flat out like, the name of who the tall was supposed to be.
Like one of the kids misidentifies him. Yeah. Yes. And he gets really fucking annoyed about that.
Anyway, and then he gets possessed by the Gyuki, turning into a giant cow, spider, crab thing.
Weird face, looking man. York, yeah.
Question, he's fucking dead by the end of this episode, right?
That's what they say, yes.
Okay, just making sure. That was like a straight-up Kitaro killed a man.
Did we see him get released from...
No. He spat out everyone else. That's the fucked up thing.
Yeah, because the god says that he died.
Yeah, whoever kills the guy becomes the guy, the Gyuki.
Ew.
And he does shoot him square up between the eyes, so we don't see him turn back into a human by the end of it. It's like, oh, I'm fine again, but naked or something.
Yes, I think the god's trick is that he gets the Gyuki to kill himself by walking into the volcano.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, I didn't do it, I just fucking led you here with like a Pied Piper type shit.
This is the thing I was thinking of when I was talking about the Anime is Hard episode of Tensai Bakemon, because this has some really great animation in it, and it has some really not any animation at all, and it has some really off-model stuff.
They put it in the transformation sequence and how fucking weird that creature looked and everything,
but there's points where Nekomasumi is like super off-model in places. Mana's neck looks like she's one of those snake-necked yokai in places.
yeah
I guess that's the save up the bit for the Nekomatsumi, where she's like running around on all fours.
Yeah, I'm not sure about saving up. It felt to me like they had to like drag a load, like they mentioned in the Tensai Bakemonogatari of having to drag loads of people in.
Yeah, that's the same.
Yeah.
You get to see Tingus of Graf Mal because there's not everybody is like working in tandem, where you got a lot of different people in there, so not they don't all draw the same way, and certainly not probably not all at the same skill level. So they prepared them to keep to the agreed upon designs. So.
Yeah, and there's the thing of the guest character, particularly the director of the occult show.
He gets more ripped as the fucking show goes on. Than he...
His character design changed so much throughout.
yeah.
But that being said, it was a good episode because it gave me some of the terrible things happening to Kitaro's body that I was missing from the show.
Hmm. Initially, I thought he was just going to get stabbed through, but then the horrific transformation.
I haven't seen him get maimed in a while, right? I suppose they've just been on holiday, and it's been mostly pleasant. Yeah. Well, I say pleasant. I did have one not long ago about the fucking ghost of World War II, so.
Yeah. And I now see, searching for Gyuki, that the first thing comes up is the Narutopedia, because he was. That is apparently the Eight Tails, which was inside Killer Bee.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Was it? I'm not as familiar with Naruto. Was it like a similar looking thing, like a six-legged spider?
It was definitely a bull.
It's like a bull octopus.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I think it had like eight arms, or had four arms and four legs. But it's just like punching things with.
I also like the bit in this episode where the tourists see this fucking giant monster looming over the city. And they're like, oh, wow, must be some sort of installation. They're all taking selfies and just selfies of them getting fucking eaten and shit.
Yeah,
and then they're like, oh, wait, that's a fucking giant monster. Right, yeah, okay. Oh, dear.
And what's the other thing? The god who shows up is Karura.
Oh, yeah, I thought he was a...
She's not a yokai.
Yes.
I thought he was one of those... what do you call the birdmen that showed up already?
It wasn't a Tengu. I thought it was that because he had a little hat on, but it's just more like a... Does a Garuda look like that? That's an Indian...
It's a trans...
Okay.
According to its Wikipedia page, the name is a transliteration of Garuda.
It
is a divine creature with a human torso and bird-like head in Japanese Hindu Buddhist mythology. Because he does specify
like he's one of a number of them. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And he mentions that he's come from a distant country.
Mm.
That he's not a native god to here.
No, I'm a blow-in as well. I've only been here 8,000 years.
And this was a well-behaved god, unlike the. Previous god who got led astray.
Well, yeah, but he does only help you if everyone agrees to put their fucking personal shit aside and pray to him to help out, which is I think a big ask, but they manage it pretty handily.
Yes, I thought that was going to be a bit more drama, but even Ratman,
like with the kid who got bullied and everything, yeah
gets into it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was different to see somebody who wasn't Kitaro save the day at the end as well.
Yeah.
They were trying to play up a little bit that that unrequited love between Kitaro and Neko Musume.
They're
just kind of longing glances there. You know, she's like aghast when he gets turned into the monster.
I did like the change of context from the opening thing where she kind of says Kitaro's name as she's about to get eaten by a monster. And that being changed later on when you're like, oh, Kitaro was the monster. It wasn't her just thinking about Kitaro before she died. It was like, oh, this is Kitaro. That does change a little.
Yeah. I feel a sense they wanted to infer more about that in this, but they got to take care of the monster plot as well. So got a little sidetracked in that. But yeah.
Then we've got finally Planet With episode 8, Power Is What Dwells Within Your Own Self, in which our hero continues to deny everybody the story they want to carry on.
And I'm so fucking glad of it, you know what I mean? It felt really good.
Being supported in that as well.
Oh, the bit where your man basically turns to him and is like, what, you're just not going to fight? And he's like, no, I don't want to fight anymore. Good kid. You know, and I was just like, yeah, good kid.
Yes.
You shouldn't have to fight. You're a little kid. I'll do it. I'm a man.
Yeah.
That kind of way. That was just a really nice moment. I was, ah.
Yeah,
it's good.
And knows to me, it's like, okay, well, this guy, he's brought him into the ring. But I asked him, are you sure you don't want to do this? Like, yeah, I'm sure. Well, good, it's fine. Let's go away from the bad man, okay? But it's good. He's just like, you know, there's no way he's talking about it. Let's just go away from the bad man from now on. It's kind of nice. Yeah.
We're seeing, like, the difference in Sensei and, what's your one's name again? The Maid Princess. No, the Maid Princess.
Ginkgo's the princess. Shirayashi is the secretary for the Generalissimo.
But yeah, you have Sensei and Ginkgo. They're both supportive in his decision to not fight. He's like, hey, we're here if you want to do the fighting thing, but we're not going to push you into it or anything. Because initially they seemed to be like pushing him into this shit, but it was more so they were just doing it because this was the revenge that he wanted to get, that kind of thing.
Oh.
And to get him to prove that these people have worth. And now they're just not forcing him to. So it's kind of nice that we've seen the change context come into play as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And they are as well all about that humanity has its potential, you know, and it isn't just necessarily like fated to be directed towards this path of destruction and aggression. They can also be directed towards, you know, kinder feelings, like love and acceptance, which is what Fun Soya is doing right in front of them. So of course they will support his actions.
Yeah, yeah. And even the girl like who is decided to take him on a date, essentially, and taking him around town and just having a nice day. And she's really apologetic when she realizes all the shit that he's been through. But when she hears that the guy she thought saved the town out of, you know, his own kind of sense of justice and ever actually did it for revenge but doesn't want to fight anymore, she's still totally in support of him. It's kind of thing of like, oh, you didn't fight to save us all, but you don't want to fight anymore. Yeah, okay. Obviously, I'm going to help you out. That kind of way. It's just filled with nice fucking human moments, except for the people being shitty about about being jealous of a child's date. Fuck's sake. What an asshole.
I like the fact that Shirayashi had forgotten that she can't hypnotize Nezoku.
Yeah. She's coming across as more childish and stupid the more we see her. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the way that he breaks the illusion is...
Oh, that was a good weird bit of pervy anime, but it's just like, oh my goodness, the placement of the boobs. His psychic powers have awakened because of boobs, but not in the way you're thinking. Let me just diagram this.
But it's like the sudden appearance of a narrator for that scene.
Yeah, fucking brilliant. That was a good bit.
And I like we get the origin of...
Yes.
What's her name? Benika. Yes. Which ties in great with the Generalissimo's argument of it's like taking a handgun away from a child.
Yeah, you can see why that fucking, the ceiling thing really appeals to her with her background, specifically to do with guns. Yeah. And children,
also,
I guess.
Also, I didn't know that she was a cop until this. It was like, she's like turning in her badge. She's like, she's not going to put up with this corrupt apartment anymore.
Yeah. And she gets a lot of good, like, not only like background stuff, but kind of character development, because you can see her and your man who's the fireman. She accidentally or on purpose explains to him how he can still use his powers. But also that he's not going to stop her from, you know, sealing the world, because he can't anymore, that kind of way. But you can kind of see her point of view. And the weird kind of thing was like, hey, let's all sit in the hot tub and fucking explain this shit to each other. That was a bit of an odd scene, but it was just weird enough to work. And also her commenting is like, all I hear is just woof every time he fucking talks. What the fuck?
Yeah, it's the question of like, how slow the guy learned how to speak dog so quickly.
He does have green hair, so
but she's got weird
like,
red hair as well. But he is like, and he mentions it's not quite clear whether her old partner was his older brother or his older brother was similar to her old partner.
Yeah.
From his line of dialogue later.
Well, the reason I'm saying your man has green hair is because the former secretary has light green hair,
yes,
and the our maid princess has green hair. It's like, maybe green hair can understand animals? I don't fucking know.
I do like the fact that the Generalissimo was the one who suggested having a shared bath, and then him and the other guy are embarrassed at seeing her being nude. She's like, why did you suggest it then in the first place?
Well, let's all chill in the bath. It'll be a chill way to explain her backstory.
Gosh.
But I mean, like, aren't you naked all the time? Are you something wearing a dog suit? I don't fucking know.
Well, that might be the case. But
I mean, like, yeah, the dog suit wearing a fucking, like, a guy wearing a dog suit in a spaceship shaped like a dog. It seems a bit kind of weird.
Well, yeah, I don't think they're wearing a dog suit. I think their name refers to the fact that you get inside them when they swallow you.
Yeah.
So you're then wearing them. They are.
Well, that idea of the paradise guys who don't have a physical form.
Yeah.
That this is the physical form that they've taken, dog or cat or whatever. Yeah.
And then we discover that, yes, the other people have heard of the Paradise People, and they believe that they are an ancient race who became purely
psychic
beings.
Like the first race or something, yeah.
Who may have had something to do with the founding of Nebula.
Mm.
And then the one who looks like Sawyer's brother says, oh, the dragon's not dead, it's sleeping on the dark side of the moon, and you're going to have to fight it. For me,
yeah, real bummer.
Yeah, it's like all that healing and all the heart now is horrible for King, because he's getting his revenge is not done. And it's like, oh, come on, we're going through so much good progress here.
Yeah, there's so much in this. We forgot to say the reason the Generalissimo wanted to hear her tragic backstory was to give her one of his last sealing devices, because he only brought a couple, he has a couple. And she wants to use it to seal humanity, and is like, okay, give me your backstory. He's like, yeah, okay, you can use it.
Yeah,
but she's trying to draw out the Nebula soldiers, as she's still calling them. But she accidentally draws out, is it Tayo or?
Tora.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's a tiger.
Yeah. And they have a pretty sweet fight.
Yeah. And he just destroys the sealing device in the background to all the other stuff going on.
Yeah, he's already gotten through his trauma, so it's not like it's going to work on him again.
Yeah, I suppose, can I fucking get the dragon again?
Yeah, but there's also the bit where Shiryashi's trying to encourage Sawyer to fight, and they're like commenting, like, why are you more interested in having him fight than we are?
And it's like we just want to prove that this guy deserves to fucking live.
Yeah, but
why do you want him to fight?
The Generalissimo doesn't like to seal a planet without the planet putting up a fight.
He wants to give them a chance.
Yeah.
He wants to give them, like, even him, which his big fucking impetus on, I want to seal these motherfuckers, I'm going to send a bunch of sealing things at them and see how they fucking react. It's like, if they can prove that they don't deserve to be sealed, then obviously I'll let them off, seems to be the implication. But he's not entirely against humanity. He's just like, he's brought I don't know, fucking 10 sealing devices with him, so you get 10 fucking chances, and if you get all the questions right, you don't get sealed.
But yeah, then there's also the worrying thing that whenever Sawyer's getting angry, his psychic powers are flaring up. So it's like, is he going to turn into a dragon by the end of the thing?
Yeah. Is the dragon like a potential for anyone? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I feel as well, like, so they said that they destroyed the dragon, but obviously it had not fucking been, because they tried to fucking attack it and destroy it, you know, with aggression and with kind of forceful emotions. And then, like, they were probably saying that the only way to kind of do it is to try and confront it and be kind of, not appease it, but sort of like kind of calm it down and try and, I guess, quell those urges.
I think Sensei might have the right of it, where he's like, I want to convince the dragon that what it wants is wrong.
What if the entire series is them trying to seal the dragon?
And it's all, this is the test.
That Sawyer's
all,
the dragon.
Holy shit. Like, no, that Sawyer's actually in one of those sealing devices. That is to prove should his species be sealed?
Yeah, could be.
Fucking hell, yeah. Shit. Okay.
it would explain why he is like so disoriented and his guys for memories at the start, because he's just kind of slowly reclaiming these things out, or just conveniently things are being revealed to him.
Fantasy.
Conveniently things are being revealed to him that he needs to remember to help better understand and contemplate his current situation.
It doesn't explain the former secretary one, what exactly her deal is, but maybe they're all like moving parts of this fucking machine that tests you. Yeah. Fuck, okay. I mean, if we haven't cracked it there, I think we're onto something.
Yeah. Interesting thought. I feel like as well, it's going to like end up when, you know, the key to this is not to give in to your basic urges, you know, and do it, because that way it like spreads more hurt around.
They've said as much this. That they want the answer to be love, choosing love over power. But I think what it's going to answer is how you go about doing that in this context, at least. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rightio. Anyway, still continues to be the best thing every week, in my opinion.
So good. Like, just talking about this episode, I'm like, yeah, there was a lot fucking happening in 20-so minutes.
Anything else people watched of note?
Open Attack on Titan. The last one dropped, like, a ton of like things important to the story. Pretty much there was a military coup. They've like dethroned the nobility. The king was a fraud. We've gotten rid of him, and now we have like an interim government. But now we got to track down like Eren and Historia, who have been taken away by the lord, who is the real royalty, and he plans to take Eren's power for himself. Because get this, when a Titan eats. It's either a human or another Titan who has like one of the special powers. It gains that power and it gains sentience. So an otherwise like insentient Titan, if it ate another Titan or a human that had the transforming ability, it would gain that power and then also some manner of its own sentience. I'm not sure if it's worth it the way around, then where like initially a human can get that power by eating a Titan. Like fresh or something like that. I'm not sure. It hasn't been quite been clear in how that part works.
Right.
But essentially, Historia's family and who are the real royalty, they have some ability like this where they can turn into Titans, but also as well they can alter human memories. And it's kind of been speculated that they might have been altering human memories of the entire human race all this time, to try and lock them into this situation where they're behind the walls, hiding behind something like that.
Yeah, okay.
Anyways, his grand scheme is to eat Eren and then take his ability to, because he has the thing where he shouts real loud, he can control other Titans himself.
He's got the hacky.
Yes, essentially.
Okay.
So now it's like I had a standoff there, all of the squad are rushing to rescue him from this underground cave where he's being held, and all the anti survey squad assassination team who have like the grappling suits but with guns instead of swords are waiting for them as well. There were some other things there. It went out why really, really quickly about the secrets to Eren's past and why his father was. Like, supposedly, his father went and he murdered Historia's entire family for the same reason, trying to steal their power, but they killed him back. And also, Eren was there, and I think at some point he turned into a Titan and then killed his dad. Or something like that, because they used that power to have to alter human memories to restore Eren's memories of things he had since suppressed or something like that, and Alkin rushing back literally in his big flashback, which still some scenes in there that I don't quite have a reference point for what they could mean. I could probably like speculate what they could be, but I don't know.
it sounds like it's doing that thing where it's introducing more information that just leaves you with more fucking questions.
It does throw a lot of stuff at you all at once, and I'm still not quite sure how to parse it. Also, saying as well that Kenny the Ripper, who was this guy in Levi's past, who was the head of the assassination team, his real name is Kenny Ackerman, which is the same surname as Mikasa, and it's trying to, I guess, make this thing where, like, just the same reason that Mikasa is so good at killing people is the same reason that this Kenny guy is. They both came from this long family line of, I guess, fucking assassins or mercenaries or bodyguards who worked for the royal family or something like that. Which is why she's just, like, genetically really good at murdering people, which may also be tied into the power of the Titans, which I think trying to say that anybody has potential to be like a transforming Titan person, but for reasons why and how they do that is as yet unclear to myself, at least. I understand this has already been like explained or the previous point in the manga, and there's kind of thing one past it, but for now I'll just watch the anime, watch the TV show and see if I can figure it out myself. Entertaining, but by God, it's a little bit confusing sometimes.
I didn't watch anything else special. I didn't want cram an entire Netflix show in this time.
No. I watched another one of Asobi Asobase. That's still pretty funny. But that's pretty well known by the public at large at this point.
Righty ho. Anything else to add? No, Donald. So that ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Before we say goodbye, let's find out what's coming up this week on Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain.
Well, before I lovely and leave you for 2 weeks before I go to Japan, I want to stay. Like, in a moment, strike the iron is hot. We're going to look at the recently released new Matt Groening TV show on Netflix, Disenchantment, which is his take on fairy tale stuffs. But it's also got Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein attached as like writers and producers as well. And we know we love those guys. So we're going to delve into that and see what it's all about. See, is it up to snuff of his meet the same pedigree as Matt Groening's other animated TV programs? I'm only partway through it. It's okay. Well, high pitched, yeah, it's all right.
I discussed it last week at the end of this very podcast. So,
oh, okay.
Listeners already know what I thought of it.
All right.
We'll be doing that more long form.
On Dynamite in the Brain, up now should be the Detroit Metal City podcast. And then next week it is our Anime Music Festival draft, which we recorded before I realised that Hellshake Yano was actually appearing in, had escaped anime and was now a real live thing you could go and see at a anime music festival.
The paper one, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, just making sure that he hasn't actually broken into our reality from his flipbook prison.
Not as far as no.
Right, okay.
What does this mean for the future of humanity?
Shit.
So yes, you can listen to both of those shortly. Otherwise we'll be back here next week with more Let's Go. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.